Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, but we're going to be expanding not just the thinking, but also recognizing appetite. Yes, food. For those of you that are regular listeners, you know how much I enjoy it and how much I like to share recipes and just talk about stuff in the kitchen. Well, my guest today, who is just absolutely enamored with food in the same way that I am, but she's perhaps has got skills that I don't have. Ellen Canner has put together a book called Feeding the Hungry Ghost. Now, the subtitle is one that I think is really quite interesting. It's Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. Hi, Ellen. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Glad to be here.
Now, you have been writing about food for a long, long time. You are Huffington Post Meatless Monday blogger. You are a syndicated columnist for the Edgy Veggie. You have had all kinds of things published in famous cooking magazines like Bon Appetit, Vegetarian Times, Every Day with Rachel Ray. And you obviously like food. What in the world got you started as a chef? I have to say something before you answer that. I remember seeing and hearing more than once when I was growing up, the best chefs in the world are only the men. That's it. Women, eh. And I thought, you know, something's wrong with that picture, since women do most of the cooking most of the time in about every culture that I've ever been aware of. How did you get into this marvelous industry that for so long it was predominantly male?
Well, you have a very good point that even Jacques Pepin learned from his mother first. and that is really the kind of cooking I'm talking about. I really don't consider myself a chef. I consider myself a cook. And I love being able to bring people to my table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get kind of excited and carried away by what's happening on cooking shows, but that's not really how most of us eat. And what I'm really talking about is food that nourishes us on every kind of level every day.
And I think that is so important. I know I have always equated, because I've got an Italian background, a joy with food. And mm-hmm. the Italians that I grew up with and that I was around, like you said, they dealt with the cooking of everyday items. They were not doing these exquisite things where you have truffles that cost you $5,000 a pound. They were dealing with whatever was available to them. And one of the things that was often expressed is that food reflects the quality of joy and apprehension. And if anybody has ever been in a home where food has been presented, where you have someone with a lousy disposition, it doesn't work. It just, you'll not want to eat. It's just amazing.
The energy comes through the food. It absolutely
yes,
does.
It does. So I really liked your discriminating statement that you are a cook, not a chef. And I think, boy, this is the reason why I really enjoyed this book, because food is the essence of life. Without it, none of us are going to be here. We all have mm-hmm. to eat. When you put this book together, you make a statement inside its content. Every time you start to write about faith, you end up writing about food. What was it in your life that made this harmonious connection?
Because the dishes that move me are what bring people together. And, you know, we're coming up on Easter and Passover and, like, all the holidays where we get, you know, big, boisterous Italian get-togethers, it's always about food.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever faith you practice, food is what connects us. It's what connects us as a family. It's what connects us in a community, and it's what connects us as humans. I mean, we are all so different, but that is one vital point of connection. And I think once we find that point of connection, wow, that can be really profound.
I think so. And I love the word nurturing yourself with food. Now, today, the big hot thing is, oh, we're so gluttonous as a people. We're this, we're that, we're the other. And I thought to myself, if you can really enjoy your food, if you can really savor your food, if you can have good fellowship with yourself or whomever you're with when you're eating, I don't think we'd have this problem with people grabbing stuff that absolutely has nothing but calories in it and no nutrition to speak of. But you know what? I have known a lot of people through the years that, Ellen, they were vegetarians and they were still fat.
Oh, it's entirely possible to be. You can be a junk food vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about everything we're hungry for, and I think sometimes the gluttonous thing you talk about is because we want and want and want, and we're hungry, but we're not even sure what for. For me, we're just as hungry for meaning, for connection, for healing, for a great time as we are good food.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love how you empower food. I love how you empower the social connection of sharing food. I really enjoyed how you brought out certain stories and certain legends. Now, my husband's from the South, and of course, black-eyed peas are a very important part of the diet, and there's always been a New Year's Day ritual that's what you serve. And give us a little background on that legend, why black-eyed peas are so significant. You touch on that in your book. And most people wouldn't connect with this, but you've done a wonderful job of sharing this story, the legend of a culture that brought this about.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, if you're married to a Southerner, you know you have to start New Year's Day with Hopping John, which is a very simple dish of black-eyed peas and rice and greens. It's really, you know, dirt poor food that anyone can afford. But the legend grew up around it that if you eat it New Year's Day, it brings you luck, and the black-eyed peas in it look like coins, and the greens look like, you know, paper money. So the more you eat, the better luck you're going to have, and the more money you're going to have. And somewhere along the line, someone said, if you eat it, you will meet the love of your life. So, love, wealth, romance, luck? Who wouldn't want all that? And you're eating
Absolutely.
Great, simple food, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I want to do is share this recipe with my audience because it's for 4 servings or 2 real super-sized servings. That was going to be your whole meal. And, of course, having crusty bread with this and maybe even a salad. I mean, this is really good. But it's 1 tablespoon of coconut oil, 1 onion chopped, 1/4 cup of minced fresh garlic. And I love what she had next to that. She said, yeah, 1/4 cup, got a problem. 1/4 cup of minced fresh ginger. I would never have thought of ginger. 1 jalapeno chili or 1/4 habanero chili. You want to mince that up. You're going to need 1.5 teaspoons of ground allspice, which was another surprise for me. 1 sweet potato chopped, 2 carrots chopped, 1 bunch of collard greens. I love kale, and we love it in our house, or callaloo. I've never heard of that one. You chop that up or, you know, pull it apart into bite-sized pieces. 4 cups of stone soup, and you've got a recipe for that, or a veggie broth. 1 teaspoon of fresh thyme leaves, a bay leaf, 1 lime halved, and then a little bit of salt and pepper. Can that all go just in a crock pot and letting it slow cook for hours?
You may. What I think you are talking about now is a recipe I have right before the Hopping John, which is another New Year's Day recipe, and it's also one that's super simple. It's a Haitian soup recipe.
Yes, it is.
Hopping John has a lot of the same ingredients. It's got greens, it's got grains, and I would be very glad to actually, you can't really go wrong with either one. So yeah, you can throw it all together in a crock pot or a soup pot and just let it simmer for a bit. I find these ingredients, as diffuse as they are, you get them to spend time together, and they become friends, sort of like we all do.
Mm-hmm. And I think the flavors marry beautifully.
Yep. I think so, too.
They just marry beautifully. And you've also got the Hopping John recipe in here. Now, when you were a kid, you said every recipe told a tale. The ingredients were the characters, the preparation was the plot, and everyone was a total page-turning thrill. And I really enjoyed going through your book and reading it, because I was thinking, what is a recipe that you could do for Easter? Well, a cheese souffle, and almost anyone's going to be intimidated by it. They're going to say, oh, gee whiz, I don't know that this would work. But I loved what you said about, and I'm going to read this. Take a cheese souffle. Could beating egg whites really transform the slimy, transparent stuff at the bottom of the bowl into something huge, white, and fluffy? And how could egg whites lift and rescue the cheese sauce for the souffle? Would they all live happily ever after? I mean, this is great. This is just absolutely wonderful. When you fixed your first souffle, what was the experience like?
It was just really a child's sense of wonder. Wow, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? My parents were asleep in the other room, and my father kind of stumbled out of bed. He said, I smell something. I said, look, lunch is ready. I was so excited.
And what did your dad say?
He was real happy. He thought, you know, I suppose some fathers like would want a kid with a great throwing arm or a great skill in science, but he thought, nah, she can cook. She's going to be okay. And I'm going to be okay because I'm going to eat well.
Yes. Now, you had a paternal grandmother. Her name was Marcella. Tell us about Marcella and how she influenced you.
Oh, she was a great influence. In fact, I didn't even realize how much until I put this book together. I think a lot of families have a great Nana who is a great cook. My grandmother was a pretty good cook, but she was a great adventurous eater. And she's the one who turned me on to all kinds of interesting exotic foods from a little kid's point. Starting with halva, which is a Middle Eastern sesame seed candy, which seems like it would be so weird, and probably would be now, but she's the one who introduced it to me, and it seemed a little familiar because it kind of reminded me of peanut butter, but it was kind of different, and I thought, wow! So from then, after that, anything she wanted to get me to taste, I was game for, and we were kind of each other's partner in crime that way. She was a wonderful influence.
Now, you talk about something called lentils, and I had a very, very dear friend. His name was Sal, and he was Italian. And
I was going to say, the Italians and lentils, wow.
Oh, yes, and he came up through the Depression, and I remember listening to him tell the stories about his mother and the cooking and the things that went on. And whenever we'd go, there was a favorite restaurant we had, which was an Italian restaurant, obviously, and we'd go in there, and the one thing he always ordered was lentil soup, because he was a gentleman, he was elderly, and he didn't fix very much for himself, but he said, I love lentil soup. And he would start telling me the stories of his family. You said something about lentils that I was not aware of, and that is that they are the most easily digested of the legumes, and infants can eat them. And just like I mentioned, Sal, being elderly, people that don't have much of an appetite, this is very nourishing for them. Tell us a little bit about this, and what's your favorite recipe for lentils?
Oh, well, I'm going to have to get back to that, because, lentils. You can. One of the wonderful things about them is that you can make them. I have a lentil soup at the beginning of my book that's, I think, got five ingredients, two of which are lentils and water. And you can make a very simple, soothing lentil soup in half an hour. And that's mostly just letting the stuff do its own cooking. It doesn't take a lot of stress. Or you can really glam it up with Indian spices and make a wonderful curry with cumin and chili and garlic and ginger. But at its root, lentils have a great Italian background. St. Francis of Assisi was supposed to have loved his lentils. They are deeply nourishing. They don't need pre-cooking. They cook fast. And they are the basis for, if I say this wrong, please correct me, cucina povera, which is basically, you know, poverty food. It's every man's food. It's the food that's accessible to all. So one of the things I am very interested in is accessibility. You know, you were talking about being a glutton and food being rarefied. I want simple food that we all have access to and we can all enjoy. Lentils are a great start.
They are. And the simple things like adding onion, basic things that aren't going to cost a whole bunch of money. Now, sometimes people will think that that's bad, but I had a Lebanese friend many years ago who talked about coming up through very, very difficult times. Their family was very, very poor. And he said his mother always had a pot on the top of the stove. It was always simmering. She didn't have a crock pot. This was years ago. She had a pot on the stove, and whatever was available went into that pot. And people could come in. They had company. They'd ladle it out. But if it was carrots, it went in there. If it was tomatoes, if it was beans, rice, whatever, went into that pot, and he said it was like magic. It always smelled good. You walked into the house, and it smelled wonderful. But he said it tasted good. And his mother would make bread. Their life was very simple, but they were strong. They were healthy. And there was that awareness. They just had the nourishment of their own spirit because of the fellowship of sharing food. And I think that's vitally important. I think that we've gotten away from so much of that. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think people eat in isolation. Every so often I have to do it too. You probably do eat at your desk. And it's miserable. Sometimes I don't even realize I've eaten until I look at my plate and it's empty. We do not welcome and nourish ourselves the way your friend's mother knew how to do instinctively. We've somehow gotten away from that, which is why I encourage people to cook together or go to their farmer's market together or have a potluck, because food is meant to be savored. We have to put the joy back into it. That's the secret ingredient.
Now, you've mentioned something that I really think is fabulous, and it was something that I grew up with, and I know that many of my listeners perhaps are enjoying it to a degree today, but socially, like with churches or organizations, the big thing was the fellowship. And I can remember giving classes. This was about 3 years ago, where I set up a classroom, a seminar, where we actually served lunch, where right in the middle of the seminar, everybody broke for lunch. And I had prepared the food, and my students sat around the table. It was absolutely marvelous. And so many times people will go their separate ways. They won't interact when they're in a classroom environment. And the fellowship that went on, and then I had a girlfriend that helped me do some of the table decorations and all this other stuff. We just had a blast, absolutely had a blast. It was a lot of work, but the fellowship and the communication with everyone was just marvelous.
Yes, you weren't just making lunch. You were creating community. Mm-hmm. Because as wonderful as I'm sure your class was, when you sit down and eat together, the energy changes, the way you're able to communicate changes. And it doesn't have to be a fancy meal. It can be a bowl full of lentils. When we sit down together and eat together, maybe that is absolutely the faith I'm talking about. It just changes everything for very good ways.
And I think what it allows, your word community is very important. It allows for an openness. There is something about having a table. Early colonists knew this. You go into any culture, and this is known, that when everybody brings a little bit of something, doesn't make any difference. When they participate, when they bring something, whether it's a loaf of bread, butter, it doesn't make any difference. When there is that communal feel, there is this, well, it just absolutely brings the world into a moment of harmony. And if there's little ones that are there, the ease and the conversation and the fellowship, all of this overflows, and it just creates a harmony. And I think that many people today are so busy with various organizations, they say, well, we don't have time for that. I think that this is something that needs to be looked at differently so that we can have that revitalization in our lives and that joy and that fellowship, that sense of community. It really does make a difference.
Everything you say is so true. We just have to remind people to gently lead them back to the value of that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we think, no, I got to get back to my desk. That's where the value is. The value is in the love we can share, the love we can generate, the communication we have with each other. That's going to last. That's going to enrich us a lot more than whatever is in our bank account.
Now, let's talk about your stone soup. Now, that immediately brings up in mind rocks that you dig up out of your garden and you put it into a pot of water. But that's not stone soup. Tell us what stone soup is.
Actually, you described it very well with what your friend's mother used to have on the stove. It comes from an old fairy tale where a guy comes into town and he's not particularly welcome. And he says, well, you know, let me just make some stone soup real quick because I'm hungry and I'm going to get out of here. And, you know, you say that as you just did, and it makes people a little uneasy. What do you mean stone soup? Am I going to be eating rocks? And he sets up he builds a fire, he sets out a pot of water and he puts his rock in it. And he says, you know, I see you've got some wild greens around here. Can I add some? Because they're really good. And someone throws in a carrot and maybe an onion. And everyone in the town contributes something. And it all kind of sits together, and they all get talking. And he says, oh, good, soup's ready. My stone soup's ready. Let's all have some. And because it is a little bit of this and that, and it's what everyone contributed, you're right. It's delicious. It's a lot more than the sum of its parts. And I also have a very real stone soup, which has no rocks, but it is a way to use up all the vegetable bits that you accumulate when you cook and what most of us throw out. You can save those bits, freeze them, and when you're ready, make a very simple stock out of it that you can use as a basis for any soup to cook rice in, and it will have cost you nothing. It's wonderful. It is its own magic.
It really is. And again, your book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost, goes into some wonderful detail. Now, one of the things you bring out, which is a very real factor, and that is that we are so accustomed to having, by the grace of industrial development, et cetera, all kinds of vegetables and foods year-round. But all of us know that love to cook, that when you get tomatoes out of season that come from South America or Mexico, they're hard as rocks. They have absolutely no flavor. They look pretty, but they don't have the flavor like you have during the summer when you buy at your local farmer's market, whoever might be growing them. And they're allowed to sort of ripen on the vine. It makes all the difference in the world. Let's talk for a moment about the rhythms of an environment that we live in. What is it that we need to be more alert to regarding this?
I just did a cooking class on Saturday, and my first handout was a sheet of what's in season when. Because I say, look, we're going to use... My secret ingredient is fresh produce, and that, exactly as you say, doesn't mean out-of-season tomatoes. Because if you want the food to have flavor, it needs to start with flavor. That is respecting the earth in a real simple way. One of the things I suggest is, in addition to looking and finding out what's in season near you, is growing a little bit of your own food, even if it's just a pot of herbs. It really does teach you an awareness that we all had at one point, but just sort of got our brains, it got crowded out of our brains with everything else. We need to respect the earth. We haven't been doing a super job of it lately, but I think we're becoming aware of the importance of it. Mm-hmm. When we eat food in season and that's locally grown, it just tastes better, too. I mean, there are real rewards there.
I agree with that. And this is something that you bring out. One of your recipes in your book is Moroccan carrot salad. And you talk about how, in so many ways, it's mayonnaise that has evolved. Well, if you make your own mayonnaise, and it's just delicious. Homemade mayonnaise is just wonderful. But you say try your vegetables, maybe a carrot salad, a slaw, differently. And this one is takes a pound of carrots, a tablespoon of olive oil, a teaspoon of ground cumin, a teaspoon of ground paprika, sweet as traditional. But you can use other kinds if you want to experiment with it. You can use smoked paprika, a generous pinch of cayenne pepper, or if you have it, Aleppo pepper. You need 2 teaspoons of agave nectar or honey, and then the juice of 1 or 2 lemons, and a little bit of sea salt, and maybe just a touch of your fresh flat leaf parsley, and you chop that up. And it's just really something, but you toast the spices. Now, tell us about toasting spices.
It really deepens and enhances the flavor. It takes a minute, and suddenly your kitchen will be infused with this incredible, heady aroma. And it's deepening the flavor. What you just read, I think, aside from the carrots, were what, 4 or 5 ingredients.
Yes.
Put them together, and you have, again, a dish that is greater than the sum of its parts. The first time I had this, I thought, wow, it is really still one of my summer favorites. I don't make it all the time, but every time I do, it wakes up my mouth again and again. It's just a delight. And because it's got so few components, it's great at a party. It can sit out at a table at a picnic and not wilt. It's beautiful.
This is what your book is filled with. All of these delicious recipes, stories that go along with them, your escapades with guys that you dated when you were younger, and you said, sorry, he couldn't appreciate this with food. Forget it. He's not going to appreciate anything else. And I just had to chuckle because of the warmth of what you're sharing about the life that you live and your appreciation for food, and that these are recipes that people can use. They're not going to have to go out and spend $75 to $100 for a meal for guests. This is not going to be necessary. You can have something that is deliciously refreshing for the palate, very nutritious, but more than that, you're going to be sharing something with yourself as well as with others that really is going to give you just a marvelous, marvelous feeling of well-being. I know we're just about out of time, and I wanted to, Ellen, give out your website, which is ellenink.com, ellenink.com. And I'd like to ask you, what would you like my listeners to consider as we're closing out our chat today?
I would like everyone to feel empowered in the kitchen. You don't need to have your own superfood show. You don't need a culinary degree. You need a warm heart.
Oh, I agree. And have fun with the cooking. Have fun with it. You know, there's something about really enjoying the process of taking something that seemingly has no value to it, like a simple batch of lentils, and bringing it to life with flavor and presence. Then when people sit down, they go, oh, wow, this is so good. What did you do? Well, believe it or not, you've infused magic into your food. And that's what Ellen Kanner has done in her book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. That is why, and you probably all who are listening can think of a person that whenever you go to their home, the first thing that you are aware of is the delicious fragrance that's waiting for you. And smell that, you can hardly wait to sit down at the table and eat. Isn't that a good feel? Ellen, you bring a lot of that to life. And like you said, Easter is around the corner. And why not enjoy that wonderful experience? Check out the book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost. I think you'll find it feeding you in different ways. And who needs a ghost? Poof, it'll be gone. Ellen, thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a special guest here for the next quarter hour, and her name is Susan Harmon, and this is the woman who oversees the expo that you've been hearing me talking about that's coming up here in Western Washington. It is the Emerald Spiral Expo being held at Kent Commons in Kent, Washington, this Saturday. And we are going to absolutely have a phenomenal event, and I want to welcome Susan to the show. Susan Harmon, welcome to the program.
Hey, Donna, it's always good to talk to you.
Susan, this is a wonderful expo that I've participated in for a number of years, and I have told people that it is an event, one that's open to the public, it's free, but two, that it is a phenomenal opportunity to be able to interact with people of diverse skills, and also many products and services are offered here. And there's a warmth and an intimacy with this expo that allows people to communicate. How long has the expo been going on?
Well, this is our seventh expo that Emerald Spiral has been doing. We kind of picked up the torch from the Boeing people who had been doing it forever. The oldest running psychic fair in the state of Washington.
So that actually has been going on for well over 30 years, I believe. It's been a long time.
Correct.
Now, what is going to be going on? Let's stop for just a minute before you answer that, because you have a background yourself where you have been very much involved in working with stones and crystals and this type of environment for many, many years. What got you interested in that particular venue?
Well, you know, the stones talk to me, and I have always worked with stones, but, you know, my family background, I think that you're aware that my grandmother was a member of the Theosophical Society. My that was my mother's mother. My father's father's mother was a well-known Dutch psychic. I thought everybody remembered other lives. So, you know, I didn't think any of this was weird or strange because my whole family is weird and strange.
So what got you involved in this particular venue of working with stones and crystals? What was the trigger for you?
Well, Donna, that's just a lifelong thing of picking up stones. When I lived in Arkansas during the 50s, I would pick up stones and make villages for the fairies, because at that time, crystals were just laying around on the ground, just like, you know, arrowheads were laying on around on the ground in those days. So I just have always had an affinity for the stones. But, you know, back in the 60s, I got more and more into it, and, you know, it's just continued on. So I've been doing it for a very long time, for many decades.
Now, with this event that's happening on Saturday, there are so many different people, some like myself, that will be doing readings and be involved. But you have so many very, very talented vendors and persons that are involved with energy healing. And many of these people have been involved in this expo for a long time. Give us a little bit of a rundown on what all is going to be occurring at the event.
Well, just to give you an example, we're going to begin our speakers at 10 a.m. with Mink Fire, who is an incredible drum maker. He'll be talking about drums, demonstrating and so forth. Carol Barbeau will be speaking about 2013 and beyond. And we're going to end up our speaker day with Michael Gross doing talking about the economy and how it impacts. So you can see what kind of a wide range of people just by the three of the speakers that I've mentioned. So we have everything from Tibetan clothing. You know, you mentioned the crystals and stones. I'm not the only person there that will be selling those. There's book dealers. There's just a huge variety of people selling all kinds of things in addition to our readers and healers. And don't forget our coupon program. You get three coupons from three different vendors, and you get a free Emerald Spiral Expo bag.
Now, with all of this that you've been involved with, as you said, that you have been overseeing, this is your seventh one, what has been the most profound effect on your life in working with this expo?
The most profound effect on my life, exhaustion. it's a wonderful event. You know, as you well know, we do the opening circle in the morning before we open the doors at 9 o'clock, and the people really support one another in this community. It's really fantastic how there is such a support and care of each other with all of the people, the readers, the healers, you know, the people that are selling items, how they support one another. It's just a fantastic day. I know some reader that will say, you know, I think you could benefit by going to see so-and-so. And it's that kind of openness that's so beautiful about this group of people.
I agree, and I think that that is what makes it so exceptional, because if you have a curiosity about anything, and not just the psychic area, but in the healing area, even with a number of the products, like you mentioned, the Tibetan items, you will find that you can talk to these people, and they will tell you about maybe a village that they deal with in Tibet. Or one woman I knew that participated in the exhibit, she got her products from Egypt, and the stories that she shared, when you just usually don't have this opportunity to talk with people that are engaged in these different modalities. And it is really, really something that enlarges one's world. And I think it is that support and it is that interaction with people that makes such a difference. Now, this event is this coming Saturday. It is open to the public, and there's lots of parking around Kent Commons, and it's very easy to get to. What is
we have a link on our website, evospiral.com, to Kent Commons with directions for people. It's the parking is free, the admission is free, the speakers are free. We have hourly door prizes. It is a fun day. And don't forget our snack bar. We have salads and sandwiches and a whole variety of snacks.
And this is something that is, this event, I think, really empowers people. In fact, families come in. They often bring their children with them because it is a very cozy environment for them to be in. And that's what I really like about the event. It's just very pleasant. There's not a sense of pressure or rush. And it's this wonderful communication that you can have with others. Now, about how many people, how many vendors are you going to have participating in it this spring?
Well, not only do we have a sold-out house in terms of our vendors, we have a wait list, but I have rented two tables I normally don't rent at all during the show that I use for other purposes just to help. We have one person that's opening a new store in Linwood, and I rented a table that because we were completely sold out, you know, to her that I normally don't rent. So it is going to be a full house. We'll have over 100 different vendors at the show. And don't forget, you mentioned about the children. I myself keep what I call a smile pile where I trade the children a crystal for their smile.
Uh-huh. That's very good. Now, also, there's going to be a lot of information. You have tables where people who are participating in this as vendors have their information laid out on the table. It's very easy to pick it up. It's not something where you don't have the openness at all. There's a lot of communication that goes on. Susan, when I think about the path that you've traveled and the path of these many different individuals that participate in this event, that they travel, it's always so good to know that there is a what you'd call a safe place for people to go in and to be able to investigate and to inquire and to do a sort of like a research of what it is they want to know about. And I think that that is one of the gifts that this expo does bring to people, and it is a wonderful gift. Now, again, give us the hours. I know emeraldspiral.com is where people can go and they can find out a lot of information. But give us the time, and it's this coming Saturday. Give us the time and particulars that you want people to know about.
Well, it's 9 to 5, open to the public. Like we said before, everything is free getting in, not free to talk to the vendors. But most of our people are doing specials during this expo at lower prices than they normally charge for their work. It's a wonderful event, and like you pointed out, it's very warm, it's very family-oriented, it's a pleasant experience. Emeraldspiral.com, we will be putting on tonight an updated list of our vendors. We had some folks that were late getting their material to us, but that will all be updated tonight, so people can download the list of vendors by booth or list of vendors by name as of tomorrow.
EmeraldSpiral.com. Check out the website. You'll find out more of the details for those of you in Western Washington. And just know that it's always good to investigate. It's always good to question. And if you've had experiences and you go, gee, I wonder who I could talk to, come on out this Saturday, and I think you'll find it a wonderful experience that you'll say, I want to do it again. And this is held twice a year here in Western Washington, and the upcoming date in the fall will also be listed there. Susan Harmon, thank you so much for being with us today, and I'm looking forward to seeing you and all of the other people there on Saturday. Have a magnificent day.
Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, well, we've got a great lineup of people this week. We're going to be talking about a man who worked in Washington, D.C. He was given the name of Gadfly, and we're going to be talking about this fascinating man and his career tomorrow. And I think we have got a caller on the line. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Donna.
Hi.
Donna?
Welcome to the show.
Hi, what's Donna.
Who's on the line?
This is Pat. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, Pat. Now I can hear you. Oh,
okay.
Right.
Donna, sorry to ask you again about my car. We had a very short conversation, and I never found out if it's going to last a while. And now my mechanic has a totaled Subaru and wanted to offer me some parts. And I was wondering if you see anything that I should take from the car that I might need for mine. And do you see my car lasting? And for how long,
yes.
My Subaru?
Oh, yes. Your car can last for another 20 years if you want. All you need to do, and taking parts from a vehicle that is just wiped out, I think your mechanic's doing you a favor, because that's what
absolutely. He's my angel.
Well,
there's no engine,
really,
but there is a transmission.
I'm sorry, hon.
Hello?
What were you saying?
There's no engine, but there is a transmission. Do you see what parts I should take?
No, I think you should trust him. I think what you've got, you need to make an assessment. And I think that he is really, really a savvy person, because your vehicle has got corrosion within certain parts of it. And
right.
it's going to need to be fixed. And because in today's world, if you have an older model vehicle, it is very difficult sometimes to get parts. So when he offers you this and just say, well, if you feel that it's good and it's solid, then let's do it. And he's not going
I have to tell him what I want, because he's got to get rid of it in a few days.
Well, I think you need to sit down with him and say, okay, you tell me as a mechanic, because you're not going to know. You tell me as a mechanic and you know my car. This is my baby. You know the car. What is it that you would take from this vehicle to put in mine? What do you see as a timely replacement? That's all you need to do.
Okay.
And let him itemize it out so that you can look at what your costs will be. And I think he'll work with you as far as your payments, though. So
he always does.
Yeah, so you just need to work
it out. Honestly, Donna, I won't have, see, I don't have a lot of money. I'll be able to afford to take care of parts and keep this car going.
Oh, yes, I think so. I think so.
Thank you so much.
And it will be for under $1,000, which is
okay.
Going to be incredible. You couldn't get a car for that kind of money. So he's really
yep.
going to do you a favor. So you just go ahead, talk to him, work it out, and just be down to earth and practical, and his judgment will be sound. But this is an opportunity.
Okay, Donna, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And he's going to love the fact that you said he was a really savvy person. He gets a kick out of you. Thank you, thank you. God bless you.
Oh, you're welcome. You are welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, dear. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you want to chat at 888-627-6008. On Wednesday, we're going to be talking about a Kiowa Indian. His name is Big Bo, and this is a story that I think really is quite special. And the author, Mr. Vetter, knew Big Bo, and he was given the opportunity to write Big Bo's story. And one of the things that I think is a gift of, you know, North America is that we've had so much cultural diversity even before the Europeans came to this part of the world. And to be able to save some of those stories, to be able to hear the stories of elders that have been written down, to me is a very rich gift. So we're going to be sharing that with you on Wednesday. And then how to save the world on $5 a day. Now, that sounds a little strange. Save the world? You got to be kidding. Well, Fred Feldman is a gentleman that has been very involved in working in different environments to make the planet, if you will, a better place. And so his perspectives on what can be done to, well, to give back, you might say, into the factors of life, he's going to be sharing that with us. And then on Friday, we're going to have an open mic in the first half of the show. And then I've got Coral Holmes, who is up in the Aleutian Islands off of Alaska. She has a novel that is just absolutely fascinating, and it's about a legend of the Aleutians. So we're going to be sharing that with you. She's going to be joining us for a quarter hour on Friday. This is Donna Sebo, and give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. And, you know, I know that the Easter holiday is coming up, and just as the guest we had today, we're talking about food and, oh, just so many things. But before I share something with you, I don't know that I'm going to have a chance. I might do it tomorrow. I was sent this delightful story about dogs welcome that I just had to share with you today. And a reader of my newsletter and someone that has listened to my show, she said, I think every human should get a chance to read this. Therefore, I'm sending it on. And that's why I want to share it with you. There is absolutely this marvelous photograph of a golden lab laying down in a bed. It has this nice brass headboard. There's a lamp on a side table. This dog is just cozy, comfortable, with its head on a pillow and a nice blanket over it. And this is what she sent me. A man wrote a letter to a small hotel in a Midwest town he planned to visit on his vacation. He wrote, I would very much like to bring my dog with me. He's well-groomed, very well-behaved. Would you be willing to permit me to keep him in my room with me at night? The hotel owner responded immediately to the person that had contacted him. He said, Sir, I've been operating this hotel for many years. In all of that time, I've never had a dog steal towels, bedclothes, silverware, or pictures off the wall. I've never had to evict a dog in the middle of the night for being drunk and disorderly, and I've never had a dog run out on a hotel bill. Yes, indeed. Your dog is welcome at my hotel, and if your dog will vouch for you, you're welcome to stay here, too. I love that. I thought, gee, this is so real. And I just thought it was absolutely precious. And for those of you that are animal lovers, I think you would enjoy the chuckle as well. And my newsletter will be coming out, and I will be putting that out this coming weekend, and that little wonderful, delightful story may be in it, too, just so that it gets passed along so you can share it with friends. And by the way, if you have a wonderful recipe or something special you'd like to share with me, send me an email. And we're having some challenges with our server, but send it to DonnaSebo@comcast.net. You'll get right through, and then we'll be able to share it on the air. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It's so important for you to realize that as an individual, you're here for a reason. And this reason is to bring the best of what you are as a human being to this table of life so that it can be shared, enjoyed, and expanded into the way that it was meant to be. And that's what living life does. It shows you your strengths, your weaknesses, but more than anything else, it shows you how very much connected you are to everything else in life. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you've been with me. Won't you join me again tomorrow? We're going to be going to Washington, D.C. and talking gadfly. Chat with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.